pandemic, we can never be caught unprepared again. And so many Americans, when COVID hit, they had nothing in the house. Stores were shut down and doctor's offices were shut down. And even if doctors prescribed drugs, hydroxychloroquine, ivermectin, pharmacists wouldn't fill the prescriptions. That was a nightmare.
Now the situation is much worse. We have these horrible supply chain problems. In our emergency medical kit at the wellness company, we have 8 prescription drugs that are all potentially life-saving.
Most people have died with COVID. They died in the hospital because they didn't receive early treatment.
Every American family should have one of these.
I can tell you the wellness company kit is the answer.
Hi, everybody. I'm Christine Dolan, and this is Globalist in Plain Sight. And we are back with our team to discuss the debate that happened on Tuesday night with Jim Kunstler, Jeff Cleghorn, and Dr. Chris Cassells. Hi, guys.
Good morning.
So who wants to go first on the grading of this debate? Because I found it absolutely... I don't even know, you know, it's not that it was bad. It was just a pile on of insults, because every time that Kamala was asked a question, whether she decided not to answer it or she danced around it, she would just drop the insults. And I thought to myself, you know, I wanted Trump to say, you know what? Why don't you just give me all the insults in one pile? And then let's move on to the policies. I mean, I found it to be irritating.
Everybody that I've listened to on the subject of this debate, the main thing they have to say is that they are able to come up with all the things that Mr. Trump was not able to state. And the main thing that was going on in that debate was that Kamala Harris was speaking in declarative sentences, and Mr. Trump was speaking in his usual choppy, distracted, telegraphic manner, and communicating really poorly. And he dropped every opportunity to really lay up a shot on her. And you know, he could have just stopped the whole thing stopped her whole campaign by asking the moderators why they didn't bother to check the hoax statements that she was making about fine people and losers and suckers and the J6 things. He could have just said, why didn't you fact check the suckers and losers statement, because you'll discover that it's been debunked. In fact, the leading left debunking website, Snopes, debunked officially the right. Fine People hoax a year ago, so those moderators were not able to moderate on purpose, and he should have pinned them on it and shown the public how irresponsible on purpose they were.
But that would have made it about the moderators more so than the topic, don't you think?
Well, he wasn't on topic anyway. He was all over the place, and she was just dumping on him.
Jeff, what do you think?
He could have stopped that dumping by saying that the moderators were not fact-checking Kamala.
Well, the moderators made it about the moderators by interjecting themselves with the critique and evaluation of Trump's answers and arguing and debating with Trump themselves instead of allowing Ms. Harris to do that, which is the purpose of a debate and the proper role of a participant in the debate, not the person asking the questions, I don't think. And certainly if you're going to take that approach, and I understand it's been done in debates in the past, you've got to do it for both candidates. And, you know, Trump is prone towards telling whoppers, as we know, but the refusal on the part of these moderators to call out Ms. Harris when she was telling whoppers as well indicated, I think, you know, in a way that was just clearer than usual to me that, you know, there was an agenda at play here on the part of a biased mainstream media that favors one candidate explicitly and disfavors another candidate explicitly. And as I said to y'all last week, I am not a Trump fan. I have never voted for Trump. I do not like Donald Trump. I think he is a congenital jackass. But, you know, he knows what a woman is, and he does not hate America. He does not hate non-college educated, white, rural people like, you know, where I'm from and where I live now. But I thought the moderators made it about themselves by putting their finger on the scale in a way.
Chris, what do you think?
Well, I think the analysis has been really interesting to me because, you know, my wife and I, and we're very educated people and very sophisticated in the medicine business. I have to read people. I mean, that's just part of what I have to do, is to read people very carefully. And you learn very early on that it's not about substance. It's not about what you say or how you say. People don't retain the words you say. If you check what people's absorption of material is, it's entirely a feel, a set of context and all that. It has nothing to do with the words that were actually spoken or the written word. It's at best a 60-40 phenomenon where 60% is just a feeling and 40% may be content. So ABC knows this and the media knows this, and most of things are in fact just that. It's a feeling. And so they arranged for her to push out a good feeling kind of a presentation, and they know perfectly well that Donald Trump could be made to not feel good. And so that was their goal. They accomplished that goal. They got her, they rehearsed her. She appeared very much highly rehearsed. If you look at any of her stump speeches or the subsequent interview, it's the same stuff over and over again. It has no content. It's a whole bunch of phrases strung together to convey an impression as opposed to convey any facts. Because, of course, the facts are ugly, as both Jim and Jeff have pointed out. They're very ugly if you were to get down to, you know, a good, bad, plus, minus set of metrics, which we all tend to want to do, then she loses. But so this was all, you know, about ABC really putting together what's essentially a Luke and Laura soap opera. If you go back to the what was it? Was that General Hospital or Days of Our Lives or something like that? But Luke and Laura, and the great part about all of that is that Luke and Laura did not get together in this debate. You know, the outcome's supposed to be, they either kiss, fight, or kill each other, didn't happen in this particular episode of the soap opera. And so it makes you yearn for yet another thing. It leads me to be suspicious that Donald Trump instinctively knows this, being a media character most of his recent adult life, that he kind of knows this, and everybody's going to be begging for a sequel. You know, content-wise, what happened 3, 4, 5 days after the debate was entirely different from the gut instinct impression that made you want to turn the television off and go away, go do something else, get your popcorn, whatever, go to bed, forget this never happened. I mean, it was a bad movie. You know, there are all sorts of emotional things that you know, I suddenly realized I'm being manipulated here. I'm totally being manipulated. I know the content, and the content was completely fallacious on both sides. It was just, when Trump exaggerates, people call that a lie. But about half the population says, you know, I believe that to be the truth, and I have facts to back up my belief that that's the truth, and I'm glad somebody else out there is willing to say it out loud. And the other half of the country is saying, oh my God, he said it out loud. that's just how that thing plays out. At the end of the day, it was but one episode of General Hospital, and no more, no less than that. And the polls reflect that it didn't change anybody. And so where are you getting the, I mean, there's a small group of people that we're supposedly trying to affect, because historically we believe that the undecideds, the non-denominational group is going to, in fact, decide this election. I don't think that's the case this year, even though recent history has said that. I wonder whether that's the case this year, and I wonder whether this debate is going to do anything other than stir up the media pot for a sequel.
Do you guys think economics is on the table, front and center?
Yeah, I do. I think it's up there, although there are things that are close second, you know, the border and censorship and war. But speaking of the economy, you know, she has been talking up this idea called the opportunity economy, and it's really such a transparent grift. For example, she wants to give $50,000 to small businesses to start. And I don't see how the federal government has the wherewithal to follow up on what these people do with the money any more than they did with the PPP handouts during COVID. So it's in essence, it's just an invitation to fraud and grift. And plus we would be spending money that we don't have, a great deal of money that would be pumped back into the system as inflation. And the whole thing is insane. The first time home buyers handout of $25,000, Kamala says that it's to allow them to get their foot in the door and then just, quote, do the work that they need to do. But we seem to forget we tried that in the early 2000s with the federal housing mandates, that people who couldn't afford houses had to get mortgages. And the result of that was the housing crisis and the mortgage fraud crisis of 2008 and 2009. Right. So, you know, that's just a replay of another fraud. So I think her entire opportunity economy is simply an invitation to grift and fraud. And, anybody who's been paying attention the last 20 years ought to be able to see that.
I thought it was interesting when she, her subsequent interview in Philadelphia this week, after the debates, she was asked about, you know, what her economics was. And she talked about how she loves small businesses. But nobody seemed to ask the question that was obvious to me, whether it was in the debate or later in that interview. If you love businesses, are you going to shut them down if we have another pandemic? I mean, yes, the country was built on small businesses. At the same time, what's the protection? Because so many people lost their businesses
they put them out of business.
That's right.
They put millions of people out of business, and the people they allowed to conduct business were Walmart and the big chains. So, you know, there's something janky going on there for sure.
Absolutely. So from a man's point of view, I want to ask you guys, put you guys all on the spot. From a man's point of view, did you think she came across bitchy? Because I do.
I thought that I was kind of being seduced in a bar. You know,
how many times have you been insulted in a bar, Chris?
Well, it wasn't that. The words were insulting, but it was all of the rest of the mannerisms and the cutisms and the this and the that and the so forth. And I like it when a woman is attractive. That's nice, but I like it much more when the first thing is smart and cute and interactive and all that. And I thought I was getting a song and dance. So mm-hmm. as a man, I looked at it and said, no, this crap is high maintenance and I don't want to go anywhere near it.
Jeff, what do you think?
Well, I thought she did well on optics. She certainly was dramatically better than Biden. And, she came across generally as smooth and polished. And whether what she was saying made sense or was whether it was true or whether it responded to the question or not, she was saying a series of words connected to each other. And the average Joe watching television's, perhaps more impressionable by that than we may be. There were at least two times I remember where she, however, just rubbed me the wrong way, is when she kind of paused and looked at him and said in an angry tone, "You're despicable." Remember that? At least twice I remember she used the word despicable to describe Trump. And boy, I tell you, I can make the argument that indeed he is, and he uses a lot of ugly words to describe other people, especially his political opponents. So, fair is fair on the one hand, but, I don't know whether it's because it came from a woman or because it came from the party that is claiming that they're not Trump, that they're better than Trump, that they are superior in terms of morality and virtue, but yet without hesitation and frequently they quite knowingly and purposely scoop to the gutter lows that they accuse Trump of engaging in. Whether he's doing it or not, what's the upside in your, matching him word for word and insult for insult if you're supposed to be different and better than him? That rubbed me the wrong way, especially as well because so many of the Democrat Party oligarchs so frequently come out publicly and talk, let's just call it cat doo-doo, about Trump voters, MAGA voters. Nancy Pelosi was again doing it recently. She's done it many times. They all have. Biden has spoken very pejoratively towards MAGA voters. Hillary has, Obama has, they all have. Mm-hmm. And I have never voted for Trump, so I guess they're not talking about me, but I'm culturally a MAGA voter and I'm looking for a reason to vote for Trump this time if he can quit stepping on his winky dink during the last few weeks of this debate campaign. Well, I think that her engaging in that just mean-spirited, you're despicable kind of thing. I was hearing Nancy Pelosi and Hillary Clinton and the rest of them in my ear because every time I hear them, I believe they're talking about me and people like me. And, that irritates me.
One of the things that bugged me was that as the debate so-called went on, Trump was just wearing what I call his frog face, which is sort of like this. And that was very unappealing. Somebody should have mentioned that that's not a good strategy. And, something else, let's not forget that Kamala Harris is the sitting vice president, meaning that she has all of the tricks and wiles of the intelligence blob behind her to figure out ways to get to her adversaries and make them crazy. And I think that they succeeded by, putting Trump in that defensive position.
Okay, so we are joined by Mike McCormick, guys. Hi, Michael.
Hey, Christine, how you doing? Sorry I was a little late.
That's okay. So, Michael, you've been in the White House for, Democrats and Republicans as a stenographer, and you're familiar with the Biden family because you've been investigating them now. So what was your take on the debate this week?
Well, first of all, I didn't see it. I can't watch those things. I just can't. It's okay. Just such a fraud. I did see a lot of coverage I get my news now off of X, off Twitter X. Mm-hmm. So I saw a lot of coverage there. Didn't surprise me at all that she was very poised. I think she surprised some people, but didn't surprise me. I think she was well coached. She's a Democrat. They do that. They probably had a lot of ABC was definitely on her side. I mean, Donald Trump is suing ABC. You know, he's suing ABC News. He's got a lawsuit against him. So the whole point of the debate, to me, putting it on ABC and only ABC was very strange. And I don't think, you know, that was brought out. It certainly wasn't brought out in their questioning. It was very biased. I mean, I've seen, I remember the debates in 2012 and 2016. Mike Pence did an amazing debate in 2016. I think he basically turned the campaign around for Trump when he so soundly beat Tim Kaine. So debates are key and critical, but they've gotten to this point now where it's just entertainment. And so it's not worth watching. It wasn't, you know, it wasn't a fair debate. They're not fair to Trump. And so I didn't bother watching. I just waited for sort of the reaction. And now we have it. And I think what you said about that interview that she did in Philadelphia, the local news guy, that guy asked her, can you specifically point to an economic policy? And she just went into blather.
She goes into this. Well, I grew up in a working middle class family, and that has to do with sort of identifying. But it's a bunch of words, because when you take a dive into this, she's basically going to raise the tax rate on small businesses. She's going to give small businesses 50 grand. She doesn't talk about what they did to the businesses in the past. There's no question about, are you going to shut down businesses if there's another pandemic? Nobody asked her if she wants to shut down all the labs that are the belly of the beast for the vaccinations. Right. I mean, there's a total disconnect of facts. Nobody's connecting the dots, and nobody's really challenging her, because she's, you know, the even giving the money, as you said, Jim, get, you know, the housing market, we've already been through this. That's what happened. That's why we had the collapse in 2008. But Michael, when you're out on social media, do you see that there's any hits? Or is it just all coming from the DNC saying, oh, she's fabulous? Because I truly thought that this was a disaster. I thought it was the worst debate I've ever, the most consequential debate, but the worst debate I've ever seen in 40 years.
That's probably pretty accurate. And yet no one, you know, the viewership of that debate was down by like 20 million below what Trump had with Biden in June. So the viewership was low. The social media response, I mean, Trump walked out into the spin room and he talked to the media in the spin room. She didn't do that. She can't answer specifically economic ideas that she has or suggestions. Trump's come out with three in the last week that are significant. No taxes on tips. We're not going to tax Social Security, and we're not going to tax overtime pay. And those are significant for his constituency, for a lot of Americans, for economic policy. Those are big, big moves. She's not countering that. So she's sort of sitting back, basically rope-a-doping, and she's taking some hits. I agree. She's just trying to pretend that she's presidential, and she's not. And people are starting to see it.
All right, so let's take a break here. And then on the other side, let's talk about the cats, because we have to talk about the cats on both sides.
This is a special report. Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
If you haven't noticed, gold has reached a new high, all-time highs, actually, and keeps going up every day. Why is that? It's because precious metals are a long-time historical store of value. And if you own a portfolio and you have assets in the fiat currencies, i.e. stocks, bonds, cash, or whatever, you're vulnerable to hyperinflation, which is coming as our debt explodes another trillion every 90 days. It's really scary. So how do you protect yourself? Go to Advisor Metals. If you look on any of our CDM.press sites, about halfway down, there's an ad for Advisor Metals. Click on it, fill out the form for your contact info, and Igor Bashatsky will contact you and talk to you. It's an easy conversation. There's no sales pitch. He's completely verified by us. He has a regulatory background we've checked into. We've checked with his bankers. We've checked with his IRA custodians for metals. And we can highly recommend Advisor Metals and ERA. So go to Advisor Metals. If you call them directly, tell them we sent you at CDM, and he'll definitely take care of you. But protect your portfolio, because you really need to. It's coming. Thank you.
Okay, so we're back. So I want to bring up Katz. We've got on the Republican side, we've got Katz in terms of J.D. Vance's. But then when Trump brought up the Katz and the immigrants, everybody went crazy. So we've spent the last week, people are looking at immigrants and they're taking a look at whether or not the animals have been, harmed all over the country. I mean, it's almost like a cat and mouse game. There is such a thing as using animals for voodoo. There is such a thing as there are places, and it's not illegal to eat a dog in the United States, which a lot of people don't know. You can't sell it in the grocery store. But I mean, I thought to myself, Trump has a way of saying things that sometimes doesn't really land. When he talks about the border, he doesn't talk about the human trafficking. He talks about the invasion, all right? He talks about the wall. Nobody talks about the Treaty of Westphalia or sovereignty. But did you guys think that this was as big a deal as everybody's making it out to be? Who wants to take that? Chris?
I don't think the dogs and cats... I think the dogs and cats are kind of a smokescreen for the sheer fact that these enormous numbers of immigrants, of illegal migrants, are being strategically distributed around the United States. That's the issue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the dog-cat thing is, I think it's political learned behavior. Mitt Romney, the dog being placed in a dog carrier, which dogs like to be in their carrier because they know they're going for a ride, but the dog was on the roof because the dog had diarrhea. Nobody's going to keep that dog in the car, and the dog's perfectly fine on the roof of the car in its carrier. The comment, Vance's comment about cat people, these are really emotional. The thing about Bobby Kennedy and having at one point or another in his life eaten dog, whether we know it or not.
It was a goat. It was goat.
It was a disaster for him that somebody reported that he had eaten dogs. People don't know it, but at one point or another, the majority of the meat in McDonald's hamburgers was horse meat coming in from Australia. But people are aghast at the idea of eating animals. It's curious that they're actually very happy to kill babies, which goes back to Abraham and God telling him not to sacrifice his son on the altar. It's one of the sentinel moments in the development of the human tribe over other animal tribes. But people are aghast at the idea of eating some of these animals. Then, of course, you have the Wuhan thing with, the market where people were eating bats. We all go, oh, my God, eating bats. So whenever you delve into this area, you're delving into a completely emotional response of a taboo that exists within the country. And frankly, it was a huge opportunity for Trump, and he blew it because it just didn't connect emotionally with people about the whole issue of eating pets and all those sorts of things. It was one more layup that he kind of missed in the interview, but it's that which should not be spoken about in normal conversation. So it is therefore used politically.
So the debate that's coming up, I think it's October 1st between Vance and Tim Walz. Let's talk about that, because I actually think that that may be a debate that could make a difference. I think and Jeff, you and I have been talking about the transgender issue for several months now. So when Walz made the state of Minnesota a sanctuary state, so if I don't affirm my child gender, my child can go to Minnesota and the state will actually operate and give my child puberty blockers. And to me, this is a topic that needs to be discussed during this vice presidential debate. Jeff, what do you think?
Well, I think I like J.D. Vance. I really like J.D. Vance. I like his backstory and I like his political ideology. And his political ideology, which I've heard him explain in detailed extemporaneous speaking that is on YouTube that prior before becoming a politician even, the ideology, as I understand it, is that America is more than an idea. We are an idea, of course, the only nation in human history founded on the principles of liberty and freedom. We're exceptional for that reason. But there's more to America now, 250 years into this great experiment, because we have shared traditions, shared heritage, shared culture, shared language, shared religious traditions, and Judeo-Christian foundation that created this great democracy. And so he talks about that, J.D. Vance does, and that, I think, is what he meant when he talked about these childless cat ladies. I think that instead of answering that question, that, you know, and he has subsequently done this, use any question about that to talk about America as shared ideals, and that if Democrats are going to reject our shared ideals, e pluribus unum, out of many come one, if the Democrats are rejecting that in favor of extremist, radical, identitarian politics, as they are doing now, everything's about sex, gender, and race. And the same thing with regard to the eating, he's eating the cats in Ohio. You know, what difference does it make? I think J.D. Vance has subsequently done a really effective job of explaining that the Democrats only care about what's happening to small town America because of this invasion of illegals. They only care about it when something crazy like cat eating comes up. Otherwise, they're happy to ignore the issue. Why are they sending these people to small town Ohio? Why are they not sending them to Beverly Hills and to Martha's Vineyard? So that's what I would like to see J.D. Vance talk about with Tim Walsh, and, you know, ask him as well, as you said, on this transgender ideology problem that's causing so much harm to our country. Ask Walsh why the Democrat Party supports, as many Democrat states are doing and have done, laws that take custody of children away from parents if parents refuse or uncomfortable allowing them down this risky experimental voodoo medicine called transgender health care for kids that's based on, it's not evidence-based, it's not scientifically based, it's ideologically driven on queer theory and queer pedagogy. It's ideology over medicine, and the Democrats are institutionalizing that through state laws and local laws that allow schools to transition children without parental consent or keep it secret from the parents. And these things are actually happening real time. There are literal examples of everything I'm saying that has happened in recent weeks in the United States and others in the United Kingdom as well. So I would like to see J.D. Vance really crawl up on Tim Walz about those kind of issues.
What do you guys think that this election is going to be about the larger issues, the foreign policy, or do you think it's going to be really coming down to what's happening locally? What are your thoughts about that?
I think, we'll see what happens in the Middle East over the next couple of weeks as far as foreign policy or on the border with Ukraine and Russia. That may be driving where we all wind up with our votes. I hope not. just quickly back to the debate with J.D. Vance. I think he's going to tear Tim Walz a new one. I think Tim Walz is going to go out there and try to be like Joe Biden was against in 2012 and against Ryan. And I think J.D. Vance is superb. He is worth his weight in gold for that campaign because he's such a good debater. He takes on the press like no one I've seen in a long time. And so I think he's going to win that pretty hands down. And it's going to be significant. But back to your question about the bigger stuff, we'll see what comes out with the, you know, where foreign policy is going with the international, you know, how the rest of the world approaches our election, because they always do. Trump certainly has the upper hand over Kamala in that. And the local issues that are arising are actually foreign policy. That's, you know, the travesty at the southern border, the illegal invasion of America is a global phenomenon. It's a globalist phenomenon. So, you know, I think that there's people are really focusing on that, and it's also impacting the economy. So those are going to continue to play. And, you know, Trump is making his points with the voters about these tax breaks that he's putting out, specific tax breaks. And these address people who are stuck with jobs that need more money. Basically, they need a little bit of boost, and they're getting it by not having to pay taxes. That's a really good policy. I think that's going to be really popular down the road.
Yeah, I tend to agree with the policy thing. But, you know, I've heard a number of people, I guess Jeff Sachs and some other people, who really are lifelong insiders, State Department, CIA, intelligence and all that. And they say there isn't such a thing as a domestic policy. There is only foreign policy. And domestic policy is merely a trickle-down phenomenon. So with that in mind and the wag the dog history, I fully expect conflagration worldwide to occur between now and the election. I fully expect it. I think it's going to happen, and it's going to happen because one party needs it to happen because they are concerned. And this goes to your actual question, Christine. This goes to how they're going to win the election. I don't think they can trot out a big enough cheat this time. I mean, there's always been cheating. We saw epic cheating with the 2016 election. We saw cheating that was unbelievable compared to that with the 2020 election and the 22 election, so the midterm. And so, but I don't think this cheat has the capacity to be big enough. And so, therefore, I assume that Mike is correct. We are going to have a wag the dog kind of scenario where we will have much bigger trouble in Eastern Europe, in the Ukraine and Russia, much bigger trouble in the Middle East, and very, very possibly, I mean, very possibly a local strategic, if you will, nuclear weapon used. And then the response to that will be, you know, some kind of tamp down. But yeah, I fully expect that to happen based upon the idea that the cheat can't be big enough.
Our foreign policy is insane now. Just it is insane. We have a government that really doesn't have a principal executive. You know, it's just a mysterious clack of operators behind this cardboard figure, this cigar store Indian called Joe Biden. And late last week, they moved another 6 inches closer to World War III by saying that we're going to start pitching missiles deep into Russia. And the Russians could not have been plainer about what the consequences of that would be. They're not going to stand by and just allow NATO to pitch missiles into them. They're going to pitch missiles back at NATO and maybe at the USA. And we don't have very good defense for it. So what's amazing is that the mainstream news is not paying any attention to that. You know, these are really deadly provocations that we're making against Russia.
And we have been doing it for a long period of time. I mean,
yeah, but we really escalated it this week. You know, just this idea that it's okay to even say that you're going to pitch missiles in deep into Russia, that that's okay. No, it's not okay. It's insane.
So when you think about that, and this is the thought that I had when I was watching the debate on Tuesday night, the way that Kamala handled herself, we can say that it was theatrical, but can you imagine if that's how she dealt with heads of state? I mean,
it's a new fake earnestness.
Yeah. And I thought to myself that's not going to sell. She didn't simmer it down. And as you were saying, Jeff, earlier, the Democrats are trying to act like that they're high moral and they're not going to go low. But what we saw on Tuesday night was that she was not only willing to go low, she was willing to go back 50 years. I thought her racist comment was, whoa, way over the top, way over the top. And I kept on thinking to myself, if this is how she would deal with Putin, he'd wipe her off the floor. Mm-hmm. Bibi, wipe her off the floor. Rocket Man should never get in the room. I mean, it might work for some women who were watching thinking, oh, she can stand up for herself, or they don't like Trump just because they don't like Trump. But I thought that she did herself a great disservice as a woman. I thought she was snarky. I thought she was bitchy. I didn't think she was funny. I think that she practiced with a split screen, because every time she tilted her head up like that, I was thinking she was actually looking, even though she's looking up at him because of the height, she was looking down at him. You know, and Van Jones came out and said that, you know, she humiliated Trump. And I thought, no, from a woman's point of view, I thought that Kamala humiliated herself, because I thought it was an overreach of pounding and personal when she was trying to say that he was despicable and she was acting despicably.
It certainly wasn't Margaret Thatcher.
No, it wasn't. It was not Margaret Thatcher. And that's actually one of the thoughts
I
had.
I knew Margaret Thatcher. Just kidding.
I tell you a story that went around for those of us who are Biden aficionados and neighbors and all that. Back in the day when he was a senator, he ascended to being the senior member of the Foreign Relations Committee in Washington. And so Joe went over to Saudi Arabia back in the day when he honestly didn't know the difference between the various Arab tribes. I mean, he really didn't know you know, what a Sunni was, you know. But in any case, he held a cocktail party at his hotel in Saudi Arabia, and had it catered, and it was kind of a comedy of blunders, where he brought his wife Jill along, and Jill was wearing a leather pantsuit, and Jill's a good looking woman. And look good in a leather pantsuit, but not to a bunch of imams who were invited to a cocktail party in a country that does not sanction alcohol, and then were fed shrimp and clam shellfish. So it was the most, and of course the room simply emptied out. A couple of sheikhs sort of hung around till, you know, it was obvious that it was time to go. But it was the most disaster of a first step into foreign relations you can imagine, and I have to take from that Kamala, I mean, things may have changed in the 20, 25 years that have passed since then. Certainly 9/11 has happened since then, and our perception of the Arab world has changed somewhat, but a lot of those rules have not, and I honestly don't know that Kamala is going to be received on that world stage in the way that Margaret Thatcher was received at a time when clearly being a woman was a hurdle. And obviously she is the template for how to do it right. But I don't think Kamala is going to meet with that same welcome into the academic faculty lounge.
I thought it was interesting during the debate when she was talking about how, you know, she had traveled and she'd put together the NATO countries, you know, to support. And I thought to myself, she didn't do that. That was State Department. I mean, Michael, you know how it works over at the White House. I mean, the truth is that many times the vice president is a figurehead.
Yes, Joe Biden wasn't. And she would have been his backup, and he wouldn't have let her done the NATO deals that he did. So, you know, he had his hand in a lot of pots in that White House in a very strange and unusual way, much more than Cheney. Cheney had a lot of behind the scenes influence, but Biden was, you know, to me, I've written about it, self-promotional to get himself into that 2016 presidential candidacy slot. It didn't work. And, you know, he ran a scam to get himself into 2020 and that worked. But she is her foreign policy. Yeah, it's just, you can't compare it to anything we've seen before. She's just bizarre. I don't think she's done a single speech of substance since she's been in the White House. He hasn't done much either. It's just been a bizarre 3.5 years compared to other things. They've just kind of pushed their ideological woke agenda and sat back and watched the world kind of crater around them. It's been bizarre. And Trump is pointing that out, and Americans are seeing it. And we'll see how, you know, the media is trying to pretend it's not happening. So, you know, we'll see how America, how awakened Americans are in this really critical time.
All right. So you guys are all over the country. So I want to know from your perspective in the states you live, what are the three most important issues that you hear people talking about in your states? Jim, why don't you start in New York?
I am in upstate New York, which is not the same as the metropolitan New York City region and Long Island. It's very different. It has been very deeply deindustrialized and disinvested and depopulated. And what remains is a kind of geriatric, apathetic electorate. I don't see them paying much attention to anything, really. They seem to be deeply demoralized, especially about going broke slowly. And that's where things stand here. You know, there is a big rift between, you know, I'm living in a kind of corner of rural upstate New York that has an artsy community. The artsy community is completely woked up and delusional and insane. In fact, I would say that the Democratic Party categorically is a party of mentally ill people. And but the rest of the so-called normal people are just in a terrible struggle. They look terrible in the supermarket, deeply unhealthy, covered with tattoos that I don't see that they really have the money to be able to afford. Obese, depressed looking. And, you know, I think the country is in deep trouble because our population is so dysfunctional.
Jeff, you're in Georgia.
Well, food prices in the grocery store and the restaurants and the Chick-fil-A drive-thru. I hear people complaining about that frequently. The illegal immigrant problem on the southern border, the invasion that it represents. I hear people expressing grave concern about that frequently. Because these people are breaking the law. They're entering our country unlawfully. There are many legal immigrants in America. We're the land of immigrants. My ancestors came from Scotland and England. I am married to a lawful immigrant right now. Trump's wife is an immigrant, and J.D. Vance's wife is is she an immigrant or a first?
No, I think her parents are.
First born here, but first generation.
Mm-hmm. So and then so inflation, food prices, and the illegal migrant people by the mass millions jumping ahead of lawful immigrants who are following proper legal procedures. They lie about being needing asylum, where in fact they have no colorable claim of a political or religious or persecution based on race or ethnicity. They're economic migrants. They're coming here only because they want money. And, you know, three cheers for that, for people who want to come to a country and work hard and earn their way without the rest of us subsidizing them. You know, the money that's being given to these illegals in Springfield, Ohio, and elsewhere. And there's plenty of testimony at city council meetings that you can watch on YouTube and Rumble, where the residents, black and white, are communicating to their elected officials what's going on. I can't get my benefits approved, and now you've got these Haitians with driver's licenses and access to money. You know, what's going on here? Where's this money coming from? We're $35 trillion in national debt, and that number is growing by several trillion a year just to maintain the interest. Why aren't we talking about that? And the third big thing I hear people talk about often is their growing frustration with the way our country is viewed by a sizable number of our fellow citizens, or people who are in our country who are not citizens, who don't like us. They don't like America. They don't like what we stand for. They don't like our values. They don't like our system, our economic system. They don't like our religious values. You know, they talk about that frequently, and people hear it. People in the hinterlands hear that, and it impacts them because they know that these people are talking about them. The people who they dislike are, you know, the people who are walking around the Dollar General parking lots, just the ordinary men and women who are just trying to get by in life and be good parents and love their children and be good citizens and love our country. We can love our country, warts and all, and whatever our imperfections, we can be proud of who we are as Americans. And J.D. Vance, I think, represents that message very powerfully. So food prices and illegal immigrants and the disrespect for America are the top three I hear.
Dr. Chris, what are you hearing down in Florida and then also in Delaware?
Okay, I live in four places. I live in Florida. I'm a lifer in Delaware. I live in Maryland with my grandkids, and I go to the Outer Banks of North Carolina every summer for quite a long time. Okay, start with the easy one. Everybody in Florida is happy. They're really nice people. They're happy. They're happy to live in Florida. They don't know what's the matter with the rest of the world, but they wish the rest of the world would just leave them alone. So I mean, Florida, no problem. Outer Banks of North Carolina, they also are not at all affected by a lot of these other urban issues. But the immigration has started to penetrate even to the Outer Banks of North Carolina, where basically, in the part of the Outer Banks where I've lived for 30-some years, if an African-American showed up in the town, people would know about it. They wouldn't object, but they would know about it because there weren't any there. Now there's an influx of immigrants into the Outer Banks of North Carolina that is sizable. So people in the Outer Banks, their concern is about freedom, simply freedom. The rest of this hasn't gotten there yet. As far as Maryland and Delaware are concerned, which I have extensive life experience in both, the populations there, which are predominantly blue, are terrified that their woke world is going to go away. They're afraid that transgenders won't be able to use the bathroom that they want in school, and that their 8-year-old child will not be able to go to health education class because they will learn about queer theology in health education class, that will happen. And women, of course, across the board will never have access to an OBGYN ever again and will be chained to a kitchen table with enough room to get to the screen door, you know, to let her husband in. So the populations in Delaware and Maryland, predominantly blue states, are truly scared. They're truly terrified and completely uninformed and have been programmatically terrified, as opposed to the Outer Banks of North Carolina and Florida, where you're just not seeing it.
Mike, what are your thoughts?
Well, I'm living in the suburbs of D.C., which is deep blue. This is, and it, I agree with Dr. C, with Chris. They're terrified. One of the things that people aren't talking about that is really significant is the union between Donald Trump and Bobby Kennedy Jr. That's significant. It's really starting to filter through into these woke communities. People aren't, they're not sure how to handle it. And, you know, I agree with Chris. The gravy train, they're worried about its ending. That's what's all around D.C. They're pretty sure that Trump is a maniac and that this is all going to work out fine. But there's these little red flags are starting to see. They're not really getting it. And actually, one of them was the dogs and cats thing that kept popping up over the internet on the last couple of days. So it's these red flags that are starting to pop up. Well, a big one is Bobby Kennedy's alliance with Donald Trump, and the fact that, you know, this MAGA, MAHA movement is potentially where a lot of Democrats might wind up going, because they just can't take what Kamala's selling. She's not selling much, and smart Democrats are saying, you know what, I think I'm going to try this other thing, and I haven't done it before. I've never been a Republican. But this isn't really Republicans anymore. This is kind of something different.
So, guys, we're running out of time. But I want to thank you all for joining us and for sharing your thoughts on this. Jim, you know, before we go, you had said last week, and I agree with you, probably one of the most substantial statements made during this political cycle was what Bobby Kennedy said when he decided that he was throwing his hat in the ring and going to work with Trump. And that is something I think that we all need to take a look at, and people need to play it again, because it really does give some substance to when you weigh the odds, not the drama, not, you know, because the debate was theatrical, but just the direction of the country. It's significant, because if Kamala wins, I think this country's gone. Mm-hmm. I think this country's gone from a foreign policy point of view, from an economic point of view, from a woke point of view. I think if you have politicians who think it's more important to deal with pronouns when we're on the brink of World War III, to me, there's just, I don't even know what to say, because it just seems so stupid. But I think it's very, very dangerous. Let me ask you this, guys, before we jump out. Are you hearing people talk about getting out the vote?
Not around where I am.
Period. What about in Georgia?
Yes, I live in rural middle Georgia. For example, I have a niece who's a 30-year-old mother of two adorable straight-A little boys in elementary school. And she is now registered for the first time and will be voting this election for the first time in her life. So some people are.
Okay. I only hear it on the Republican side. I've seen nothing about it on the Democrat side. It's almost as if the Democrats, and certainly in Florida and Maryland, are afraid to get out the vote. They kind of know that if they really do get out the vote, they're going to lose big.
Interesting. Yeah, I've seen, I follow Scott Prusser on Twitter X, and he is doing an amazing job in Pennsylvania. They're pulling people out of the woodwork there, and they're flipping counties around. You know, I remember in 2016, there was a confrontational interview with NBC and Joe Biden right before the election. And it was Chuck Todd, and he said, "Hey, what's going on? We're seeing in northeastern Pennsylvania, we're seeing these polls are showing Trump up by double digits." And, you know, Joe Biden said, "Well, we've got the collar counties around Philadelphia. You'll be fine." Well, they weren't fine, and they don't have those collar counties yet again. So these things are changing quickly. There's a lot of good news out there on Twitter about Republican registrations. we'll see, because there's a whole ton of cheating that's coming. And I hope, I agree with you, Christine. We're at the edge of the abyss. And if we don't get past this election with a legal election that we can all trust, we're in deep, deep problems.
We are. We are. Absolutely. So I'm going to encourage everybody to get out there, register to vote, and drag people to the polls, because I think that we need to have more people energized and really understand that this is so serious. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining us today, and we will see you soon. And thank you to our audience as well.